Welcome to Dead Souls Social Club.
This audio presentation contains graphic details of death, violence, and controversial subject matter. Listener discretion is strongly advised. From Dead Souls Media, this is Otto Warmbier. I'm Jimmy Black, a researcher and psychologist, and I'll be your host for tonight. Welcome, welcome. So I'm back from my summer trip to the other side of the world, and I'm ready to get back into things. I hope you're all doing great. Now, somewhat of an unnerving one tonight, guys. An account that, on the surface, seems like a straightforward criminal case. Or, depending on whose opinion you side with, either a case of international espionage and government disruption and sabotage tactics, or an innocent man being used as a political pawn and tortured unimaginably for, well, nothing at all. So let's get stuck in. Back in 2015, around a dozen or so people from countries all over the world were about to embark on a fairly unusual trip. It was unusual because not many people make this trip, or seemingly think it would be a good idea in the first place. The group were going to visit the Democratic People's Republic of North Korea, or the DPRK. I suppose the trip is certainly one for bragging rights. To claim that you have been on a very special adventure that very few people can say they have completed. Well, this particular group were going to explore this secretive country, or at least its capital city, Pyongyang, with an observed, chaperoned, and guided tour. But what followed, and what happened to one member of that group in particular, US citizen Otto Warmbier, would quickly escalate into a tragic and entirely horrifying situation. But before we talk about what happened on that trip, let's get to know the man behind the incident, the American student, Otto Warmbier.
There is no greater priority for this administration than the welfare and safety of U.S. citizens abroad. We understand, we've seen the reports that a North Korean court convicted a U.S. citizen, Otto Warmbier, of hostile acts against the DPRK. Mr. Warmbier was reportedly sentenced to 15 years of hard labor. The allegations for which this individual was arrested and imprisoned would not give rise to arrest or imprisonment in the United States or in just about any other country in the world. Now, despite official claims that U.S. citizens arrested in North Korea are not used for political purposes, it is increasingly clear that the North Korean government seeks to use these U.S. citizens as pawns to pursue a political agenda. This underscores the risks associated with traveling to North Korea, and the Department of State strongly recommends against all travel by U.S. citizens to North Korea. And there's additional information about that on the State Department website, and I encourage people to visit travel.state.gov if for any reason they do happen to be considering travel to North Korea. But now that Mr. Warmbier has gone through this criminal process, we strongly urge the North Korean government to pardon him and grant him special amnesty and immediate release.
Otto Frederick Warmbier was born in Cincinnati, Ohio, on December the 12th, 1994, to parents Cynthia and Frederick Warmbier. Cindy and Fred, to friends and family. Otto had two younger siblings, a sister named Greta, and a brother named Austin. Otto did exceptionally well during school and his academic years, attending Wyoming High School in Hamilton County, Cincinnati. He graduated as salutatorian in 2013. And for those of you outside the United States and Canada, this is the position of second highest achiever in that person's graduating class, second only to valedictorian. Otto, by all accounts, was humble, kind, personable, and very popular. Whilst being very intelligent and focused, he liked to see himself as somewhat of a comedic person too. He loved to tell funny stories to draw people in, keeping people's spirits up. His friends, family, and those around him all agreed that Otto was a great guy who had an extremely bright future ahead of him. This is Otto giving his graduation speech.
Hello, everyone. When I was told that I'd have the honor of speaking at graduation, my first instinct was to find some key words, some intellectual college thesaurus words, and build my speech around those. However, my initial attempt at a treatise on the eminent graduation of the current stratum of Wyoming high school seniors came across as a bit dry and pretentious. So I decided it was probably best if I looked for some help. Surely someone in the past however many years has found the right way to say goodbye to 153 seniors in just a few sentences. No matter where we go or what we do, though, we will always have this group here. Even when Wyoming's class of 2013 is a thing of the past, we'll have the support of all of these people around us. We'll have the knowledge we gained as a group, and we'll have the reruns, the memories we've created to be played over and over again. Thank you.
Following high school, Otto went on to study a double major in commerce and economics at the University of Virginia. It was here that he also completed a minor in global sustainability. During his time at the university, he joined a fraternity and was hopeful to follow in his father's footsteps as either a banker or a businessman. But Otto loved to travel, and before diving headfirst into what was sure to be an intense few years establishing himself into a career, he wanted to ensure that he saw the parts of the world that called out to him. While still studying at university, he spent some time at the London School of Economics, for example. He travelled to several other European countries. He travelled to Cuba, Ecuador, Israel, and to China. Bucket list destinations for many, I'm sure you'll agree. He had that travel bug. It was a passion of his. And Otto's love of foreign adventures took him to Hong Kong in December of 2015. This visit to Hong Kong was part of a study program over the Christmas holidays, and Otto loved every second. The huge cultural differences was a point of fascination for Otto, and he was keen to learn and soak up as much of the culture as he possibly could. Then, just before the new year, Otto came across Young Pioneer Tours. The company had been founded by Troy Collings and Gareth Johnson, a New Zealander and a British citizen respectively. They had both been living in China and decided to form a company that specialized in offering like-minded young people a rare opportunity to safely visit the most remote, exotic, and thought-provoking destinations on Earth. These included North Korea, Iran, Cuba, Papua New Guinea, Syria, and Russia. You know, all those places that you aren't going to find on the Jet2 Holidays website. Well, as you can imagine, it's very difficult for a Westerner to enter, or indeed leave, some of these countries, North Korea in particular. So the Young Pioneers Group had established themselves as a trusted organization to take safe excursions. They had been conducting tours to North Korea for a number of years without incident. Thousands of people had visited the DPRK with them, in fact. Sure, the immigration guards do detain people at the border, but they almost always have a reason to do so. If for no other reason, then any escalation at the border involving Western tourists is likely to cause huge political repercussions, so the guards need to be entirely sure. Otto Warmbier had always been fascinated with North Korea, and the Young Pioneers Tours brochure instantly drew in his attention. Destinations your mother would rather you stayed away from, the brochure read proudly. This appealed to Otto's rebellious and adventurous side a lot. The tour company is still in operation today. The company assures their customers through their advertising materials that their tours are completely safe and offer their assurance of hassle-free travel. North Korea, as long as you stick to their very strict rules, can be a safe place to visit, just like any other destination, the tour company states. After placing a deposit payment of $1,200, Otto and the rest of the Young Pioneers Tour Group, which included about 10 other Americans a few British and some Dutch tourists departed from Beijing Airport for Pyongyang on December the 29th, 2015. They intended to undertake a five-day stay over the New Year holidays, which would include joining in the New Year celebrations in Pyongyang. The group were booked into the Yonggakdo International Hotel. It's the largest operating hotel in North Korea, and it's where all the international tourists are placed. The hotel is located on an island in the middle of Pyongyang City, enclosed and isolated. The hotel actually has a fair few mod cons, a number of restaurants, a pool, sauna, a barber's, and an extremely attentive and professional staff. The North Koreans are keen for any visitors to see an image of a prospering, modern, and high-tech nation, friendly to outsiders, and living just as well as their Western counterparts. So it's believed that while the hotel portrays this image to visitors, it's actually a far cry away from the reality of everyday life in the country. Guests at the Yonggakdo Hotel, for the most part, have the run of the place, with the exception of one floor. Floor number 5. Tourists are not allowed to set foot on floor number 5. In fact, there is no option in the elevator to select this floor number. Whilst it is accessible via the stairwell, doors to this floor are locked off, and the windows to the floor are blacked out. Now, over the years, we know from some Westerners who have stayed at the hotel and have managed to sneak onto the floor, at great risk to themselves, that it's actually a two-floor complex. Walls are painted with communist propaganda, and there are a myriad of locked doors and mysterious and secretive rooms. It's widely believed that on that floor are the surveillance rooms for the entire hotel, where the viewing and spying suites and the spying staff are located. Control rooms that house intelligence officials who are watching each guest, every single move, 24 hours a day. During the tour, things got off to a fairly decent and normal start. Upon entry into the country, they were thoroughly searched, including a meticulous search of their bodies, belongings, and luggage. They were taken to the bugged hotel rooms and shown around. Now, unlike other nations, when you visit North Korea, each tour group is assigned a tour guide. You can't go anywhere without this guide. The guide will let you know where you can and can't go, and will ensure that you are given a sanitized view and sanitized details about the country and its people. The first port of call on the group's tour was an escorted tour of the USS Pueblo. Now, the USS Pueblo was a United States Navy spy ship which was manned by 82 sailors. It was captured by the North Koreans in January of 1968 in international waters some 50 nautical miles off the North Korean east coast. During the group's tour of the ship, the group were all told about how the brave North Koreans captured the ship from the imperial enemy, how the 82 American soldiers were imprisoned, beaten, and starved for almost a year before they were finally released. This tour, an experience, disturbed Otto quite a bit. Though the group, as a whole, simply laughed it off as part of the experience. Otto was jokingly given the nickname the Imperial Enemy by the tour group from this moment on. Now, as I previously stated, everything that this group was shown was carefully curated to only show pure propaganda. The guides were careful to keep group members on a very tight leash, with military intelligence agency representatives always nearby. Group members were confined to the hotel between organized visits and not permitted to leave without express consent and accompaniment by a government representative. For the most part, what the group was shown was specific propaganda locations that were shown to be wonderful, with happy people around and no issues whatsoever. A pure, unadulterated propaganda tour. But overall, it seemed like Otto was having a good time. I suppose if you go to a location or country like this, then you know, for a large part, what to expect, and you know what experiences you are likely to have. And it was this that Otto wanted to experience, a complete opposite to the culture he knows in the United States. Otto was pretty popular with the tour group too. Everybody liked him. He got on really well with his roommate in particular, a British man named Dan Grattan. Their sense of humour matched brilliantly, and they got on like a house on fire. By all accounts, they were both having a great time. Otto and Dan were the only two solo travellers within the group, so this is why they were placed together as sharing a hotel room. It worked out well though, and they planned to hang out on New Year's Eve together and see in New Year, experiencing what the festivities were like in Pyongyang. The group was taken to Kim Il-sung Square in the centre of Pyongyang, where there were thousands of North Koreans gathered. They were having a huge celebration for the New Year. After that, the group went back to the hotel, where they stayed up drinking all night and being very merry together. But more importantly, after they returned to the hotel that night and kept the party going at the hotel bar, what no one noticed was that Otto wasn't there. The rest of the group was drinking and doing shots until around 4:30 a.m. but there was no Otto. The hotel was big, and the tour party were the only guests staying there. As you can imagine, there weren't many international tourists visiting Pyongyang. The hotel has 1,001 rooms over its 47 floors, though rarely had more than 10 or 15 guests at any given time. Again, it was another propaganda facade, projecting an image of a busy international city, when in fact North Korea rarely received any outside visitors, and the country's own citizens couldn't afford to stay at this hotel. But it was late. Some people started to return to their rooms. But there was roughly an hour and a half to 2 hours where no one remembers Otto being there or seeing him. From about 2:30 a.m. to 4:30 a.m. specifically. Dan Grattan returned to the room he shared with Otto at 4:30 a.m. Otto was fast asleep in his bed, Dan saw, and he quietly entered the room. The general assumption amongst the tour group was that Otto simply went to bed before everybody else, hence why nobody remembers seeing him. Maybe he just couldn't keep up with all the drinking. Otto wasn't a big drinker after all. Or maybe Otto had another idea. Regardless, the group would awake early the following morning on January the 1st, 2016. They had a New Year's Day helicopter tour of Pyongyang arranged, and the group were very much looking forward to it. And, in fact, by all accounts, the group all had a great time on said trip, they all later said, although many in the group were by now looking forward to heading home. The group then travelled to Pyongyang International Airport on January the 2nd. They were booked onto a flight to Beijing, China, where the group would disperse and each go their separate ways. However, as the group was boarding the plane, two North Korean officials calmly walked silently up behind the group. They singled out Otto and tapped him on the shoulder. They didn't speak any English, so they merely signaled to Otto to go with them. Otto reluctantly agreed, feeling slightly nervous about what was happening. Maybe they just needed to check his bag again, he thought. Or maybe he had left something behind that they wanted to return to him before he left. This perhaps was naive and wishful thinking of Otto. Dan Grattan, his roommate, cracked a joke and said, quote, "Oh, that's the last we're ever going to see of you, Otto." Otto nervously laughed at the joke as he was guided away, followed by the two North Korean officials. Nobody in the group knew what the problem was. There was no communication or explanation, either to the group or to Otto. Even if there was a problem, everybody was having such a great time and in such high spirits that they just took the situation in their stride and shrugged it off, thinking it would amount to nothing. They assumed that there'd be a slight delay, after which Otto would be returned to the group and they would go on with their journey. However, once everybody had boarded the plane, a North Korean official came onto the plane and announced, quote, "Otto Warmbier is very sick and we have taken him to the hospital." The official then turned around and deboarded the aircraft, and the door was sealed. No further explanation. The group was forced to then take off without Otto. A representative from the Young Pioneers tour group would later tell the press that there was no contact with Otto ever again after that moment. After Otto was taken away, this is when things get sketchy. The only information we have regarding what happened at this time comes from North Korea. The U.S. State Department was informed immediately, but they were placed in a very difficult situation. Difficult as the United States has no formal relationship with North Korea. They have no routes of diplomatic contact, so working with the North Koreans to secure Otto's release would be extremely difficult. Their initial analysis of the situation was that the DPRK was saber-rattling, that they just want to look like tough guys on the world stage. They'll parade Otto in front of the media, make him confess to being a spy or something similar. Then they'll arrange some kangaroo court trial, and then they'll likely hold him as a bargaining chip to get some concessions or to acquire something that the country or its leader wants or needs. That was what they had form for doing, the US thought, so it was reasonable to assume that's what would happen here. However, they had no idea what was actually going on behind the scenes in North Korea. They had no real intelligence about North Korea, and the US found it incredibly difficult to source information out of the country due to its extremely secretive nature. On Friday, January the 22nd, however, an announcement was made on the KCNA, the North Korean state media channel. Otto Warmbier had been detained because he was, quote, caught committing a hostile act against the state. The lack of information, coupled with the almost cryptic announcement, naturally led to rumors and speculation about what a hostile act actually meant. Was it an act of terrorism? Were they accusing Otto of being some international man of mystery? Everybody who actually knew Otto knew, of course, that the accusations from North Korea were fabricated and entirely false. Otto was simply incapable of such acts. Even people who knew Otto, such as his family, his friends, classmates, and other people on the tour, knew that Otto was a very straight-laced guy. Very well-behaved, respectable, kind, and very polite. He was not the type of guy who would break the rules. He was going to be a banker, although I don't know if that means he was more likely to stick to the rules, or less likely to stick to the rules, if you know what I mean. But I digress. It would ultimately be more than 6 weeks until anyone found out what the North Korean government were actually accusing him of. So, what was Otto's horrific and huge act of subterfuge against the North Korean state? Well, he was accused of stealing a poster. A propaganda poster from the hotel that he was staying at. The poster featured a propaganda declaration saying, quote, "Let's arm ourselves strongly with Kim Jong-il's patriotism." It also featured an image of Kim Jong-il looking strong and powerful. Now, I appreciate that this charge might seem fairly ridiculous, but in North Korea, any theft of materials featuring the name or image of their supreme leader is a significant breach of the law. It's taken extremely seriously. So on February the 29th, 2016, Otto was paraded in front of the North Korean media, which was picked up by the international press. He was coerced into making a full and very public confession. This is his confession.
"First, I would like to thank everyone for coming to the press conference that I eagerly requested to have. I would also like to show my sincere gratitude to the government of the DPR Korea for giving me this opportunity to apologize for my crime, to beg for forgiveness, and to beg for any assistance to save my life. My name is Otto Frederick Warmbier. I am 21 years old. I committed severe crimes against both the people and the government of the DPR Korea. The task was given by the Friendship United Methodist Church. At the encouragement of the Z Society and the connivance of the United States administration, I came to commit this crime task. The aim of this crime was to harm the work ethic and motivation of the Korean people. This was a very foolish aim. Growing up in the United States, I was taught that the DPR Korea is a mysterious, isolated communist nation from education and mass media. This made an innocent-minded, adventurous young man, like myself, want to show my bravery, to improve my reputation, and show a Western victory over the DPR Korea. The United States administration already knows about my act through the CIA, which is closely linked to the Z Society, and connived at my crime. I beg for forgiveness, and I beg for help in any way possible to save my life. After I came to know that all members get high-paying jobs when they graduate, I eagerly wanted to join the Z Society. The Friendship United Methodist Church gave me my crime task, which is closely matched to the United States administration's hostile policy against the DPR Korea. In order to spread Christianity in the DPR Korea and to increase the church's support from the United States administration, I took many detailed steps to prepare for my crime. I intentionally packed my quietest boots, the best for sneaking. I knew that I would wear them during my crime commitment. I stole street signs for practice. Lastly, I want to clearly state that I was the political victim of the United States' consistent hostile policies against the DPR Korea. On September 23rd, 2015, I was having dinner at my friend Stephen Webb's home with him and his mother, Sharon Webb. Sharon is a deaconess in the Friendship United Methodist Church. Sharon emphasized that her church does not support the government of North Korea and that communism should be ended. She said that communist nations rally around political slogans. She asked me to take an important political slogan from North Korea to be hung in her church as a trophy. She continued to say that by taking this slogan, we would weaken the unity and motivation of the North Korean people and show this country an insult from the West. She knew how desperately I needed a car to drive to my job this summer, so she offered me a used car worth $10,000 if I was successful. And she said if I was detained and not returned, her church would make payment to my mother of $200,000 in a way of a charitable donation. This is the amount that I am expected to pay for my brother and sister's university tuition.
Otto blamed the idea for taking the poster on a Methodist church back in Cincinnati, and also on the Z Society. That society was a secret society who operates out of the University of Virginia with known links to the CIA. Otto stated that if he took the poster, then he would be admitted into the secret society. The claims in relation to the Z Society are bizarre enough, but what is often overlooked is this. The Methodist Church, who Otto says put him up to this crime, well, Otto had never attended this church, because Otto and his family were Jewish. Further, the Z Society also put out a statement to confirm that they had never heard of Otto Warmbier. He wasn't a member and had never applied to join. Although I get that North Korea would dismiss that as something that they expected them to say. Plausible deniability is a hallmark of the CIA though, right? But Otto stealing a poster for a church just doesn't make logical sense. Nor does him putting on his quietest boots, best for sneaking. That comment is laughable and almost like someone with little grasp of the English language had written for him to memorize and say. The whole thing was read from a prepared and tightly scripted statement. He was there to, quote, harm the work ethic and motivation of the Korean people and bring home a trophy. It's very apparent that Otto had been made to practice this speech, possibly hundreds of times. It's not delivered in his own vernacular, and both friends and family of Otto all state that he seemed robotic in its delivery and different, not speaking in the way that they knew him to do. And he knew every single question that he would receive from the reporters, and he did not write this speech. It's also worth noting that he says he stole the sign from the second floor of the hotel, not the fifth floor, which was the top secret floor. He allegedly stole this from a floor he was perfectly allowed to be on, which didn't display these kinds of posters. The posters were only placed on the secretive surveillance floor. There was a level of relief that Otto was alive and appeared to be healthy and uninjured. Until this point, there had been no word. For all the family, Otto's friends, well-wishers and the US government knew, Otto may have been taken out of the airport and immediately shot. Now, with the United States and North Korea having zero diplomatic relations, any kind of meaningful negotiation was going to be impossible. North Korea sits under China's umbrella of influence. The United States has no leverage and no way to gain access to the country on a diplomatic level. The United States didn't want to escalate the situation for fear of potentially making it worse. They also didn't want to delegitimize North Korea's claims. For example, the State Department advised Otto's family and friends not to reveal to the press that Otto was Jewish. Not because of anything to do with anti-Semitism. But they were told not to bring it up because North Korea were claiming that Otto's crime was committed on the orders of a church. So if they mentioned that Otto was Jewish, it would make the North Koreans' claims look, well, kind of stupid. And they didn't want the North Koreans to look stupid. Let's be honest, the North Koreans could do a good job of that all by themselves. Anyway, despite all of this, nobody had heard or seen Otto since his televised confession. Otto's family, his friends, the US government, and many other well-wishers and concerned people were just hoping that this could be kind of sorted out quickly and without issue. Fred and Cindy Warmbier continued to meet with officials from the US administrations, first Obama's administration, and then Trump's administration. They also met with several Swedish officials who were acting as intermediaries between the United States and North Korea, as Sweden had diplomatic relations with the Koreans. Because everything had to be relayed through a neutral third party, this meant that there were long delays in trying to get the situation resolved. That's even if the North Koreans were acting in good faith in the first place, as that couldn't be guaranteed either, such is their history and form. But the United States were communicating with Sweden, who would relay the comms, but Sweden were reporting back to the US that their messages were going unanswered. The North Koreans seemed to be stonewalling them. More than 2 months had passed from Otto's initial detention. On March the 16th of 2016, Otto's trial took place in front of North Korea's Supreme Court. Otto was charged with subversion under Article 60 of North Korea's Criminal Code. North Korea reached a final verdict within 1 hour. Witnesses consisted entirely of Yanggakdo hotel staff and Security Department officials. These all had a bias towards the side of the prosecution. The physical evidence was centered primarily on CCTV footage. The footage was dark and grainy security camera footage, which showed a vaguely male-shaped person enter the staff-only area where they were recorded removing a poster from the wall and placing it on the floor. Allegedly, this was Otto Warmbier in the footage, but it was impossible to make out a face in the footage. You can Google it. The footage was timestamped 1:57 a.m. The reason for the delay between the crime happening and Otto being arrested was that because the hotel staff had reportedly all gone home for the New Year celebrations. Allegedly, the witnesses to the footage were all clear that they could tell that the person in the footage was clearly Otto Warmbier. I let you be the judge on what you think about said footage. They recognized him the next morning, it's reported, and thus followed him to the airport. Now, Otto didn't actually steal the poster, if it was him in the video at all. The video proves that. The person in the video simply took the poster off the wall and laid it on the ground. That was it. It doesn't make sense. In Otto's confession, the reason he gave for not actually taking the poster was that he realized it was too big. But if that was the case, why would he take it off the wall in the first place? Why even remove it? You can see its actual size when it's still on the wall. No one was expecting the sentence which was handed down by the Korean judges, however. Otto was given 15 years in prison with hard labor. The last footage of Otto was him being dragged off, and then nobody heard anything further. The channels of diplomacy were still going on in the background, but there was no progress being made. Nobody knew what would become of Otto Warmbier. And no one knew what Otto was going through in North Korea. Although we can hazard an educated guess based on past prisoners and information from North Korean defectors. Likely, after Otto was removed from the line at the airport, he was blindfolded, placed in a car and driven back to Pyongyang. There, according to other people who have been held by the North Korean security services, he would be held in a green tiled guest house situated behind a restaurant in the downtown area of the city. It's there where he would have been held for several days, the entire time being interrogated every single day for up to 15 hours per day. During these interrogations, they would obtain as much information about him and his background as possible. It's this information which would be used to write his public confession, which is why they were able to include several truths and facts in his alleged confession. It's more than likely the security services interrogating Otto already knew he hadn't committed any crime. His seizure was likely planned in advance. Allegedly, the Warmbier family was struggling financially at the time, and Otto was in need of a car. But for the most part, the confession was 80% fabrication, with a small dusting of truth making up the final 20%. They would never actually physically beat him or physically injure Otto. North Korea doesn't really use physical torture on its foreign prisoners. Its internal prisoners are another story altogether, of course. That's because of their propaganda value internationally. Well, not physical violence kind of torture, at least. Their torture methods are known to be holding their prisoner sitting in a room whilst their security services ask them the same question over and over and over again, with threats, psychological torture techniques, and intimidation. Otto's sentence also specifically included hard labor, and they do mean hard in these scenarios. Prisoners die constantly, on an almost daily occurrence. Work to death for more than 12 hours a day, hard physical labor with little food or water, no breaks, and constant intimidation from guards. There have emerged stories of cannibalism from these camps, prisoners often fighting over mice and rats for food. You might be forced into digging or sent into coal mines in incredibly claustrophobic conditions with nothing in the realm of health and safety precautions to support you. These places are quite literally hell on earth at all times. Prisoners are subjected to the worst depravities possible by the prison guards, all the while being forced to complete intense manual labor whilst weak at the edge of starvation. There are no such thing as human rights here. In North Korea, individuals can be sent to these camps for anything from criticisms of the government to simply poor job performance. Its inmates are considered enemies of the state. Otto stealing property with the supreme leader's name on it and face on it, well, that's a heinous crime in the eyes of the North Korean state. Collective punishment is a thing here too. So it's not just those found guilty of crimes that are being punished. They also punish your parents, your children, your neighbours and your friends. Unless you were the one turning them into the authorities, of course. Which is how control is maintained. Through fear of everyone around you, including those you love the most. Today in 2025, there are 6 active political prisoner camps still running in North Korea. We know this from satellite imagery. Each of these camps holds several thousand prisoners. Public executions are also carried out daily, although prisoners don't tend to last long even if they aren't executed. There's no such thing as long-term prisoners or life sentence survivors. Prisoners dying in their minds through starvation or simply being crippled from the physical abuse and torture. It's the closest thing to hell while still being alive. The specifics of what exactly happened to Otto during his time there remain unknown after he received his sentence. But when he was seen again, he he was definitely not the same person. The truly disturbing thing about this story is that nobody knows exactly why Otto had been held for 17 months before he finally arrived back in the United States, and upon his arrival, why his condition was about as bad as it could possibly be.
Breaking overnight, amazing news here. A U.S. college student imprisoned for more than 17 months in North Korea is now back on American soil. But we're learning that 22-year-old Otto Warmbier has been in a coma for months. Jackie Banez joins us now with the very latest on this story. Jackie.
Hey, good morning, Heather. Otto Warmbier's jet landing in Ohio late last night around 10:30. He's now in a hospital in his hometown of Cincinnati after being airlifted from North Korea. The State Department marking his release as a major victory for the Trump administration.
Let me say how pleased we are to have Otto Warmbier back in the United States. What an incredible day. We had difficulty, as you all are very well aware, in reaching him. We had to go through the government of Sweden, our protective power, in order to get any kind of information, and even then, it was extremely rare.
Otto was medically evacuated from the Pyongyang Friendship Hospital to Cincinnati on the evening of June 13th, 2017. The North Korean authorities decided, shortly after Donald Trump got into power, to send Otto home. In fact, there were talks of them sending him back even earlier, back in January and February of 2017. This was put on hold, however, due to the assassination of Kim Jong-un's brother at the airport in Malaysia. That incident put a hold on international diplomatic talks for a while, but eventually they resumed and they sent Otto home, or what remained of him. Otto was accompanied on the flight home by Joseph Yoon, a State Department special representative, and also Michael Flukiger, an American emergency doctor. He was flown to the University of Cincinnati Medical Center. Upon arrival, people were shocked and horrified at what they saw. He was a very different man from the one his fellow Americans saw crying on television a year and a half prior. Otto was now in a persistent vegetative state. His eyes were pinned wide open. He had to be strapped to the gurney because his arms and legs were flailing uncontrollably, and he was screaming incessantly. Otto couldn't talk or communicate at all. He was completely blind and entirely deaf. He was unable to use the toilet by himself, and his motor functions were significantly dilapidated. When he arrived back in Cincinnati, Otto was met by his family. His sister reportedly repelled in horror at the sight of her brother and ran from the airport runway in tears. Otto, a formerly strong, athletic, intelligent, and quick-witted man, was now something completely different. His teeth were rearranged, his hair was completely buzzed off, and his arms and legs were deformed to the bone level. Dr. Flukiger said that when he met Otto at the North Korean hospital, the North Koreans had asked him to sign a report that stated explicitly that Otto's care had been exemplary. Now, Dr. Flukiger stated to the press that he would have signed that document regardless of what kind of care they had given Otto. He was just focused on getting Otto back home. Although the doctor did say that the hospital staff did appear to be taking the best care of Otto as possible, given the circumstances. But of course, it's what led to him being in a hospital in the first place is where the questions arise from. And that is the horrifying part. Now, a number of doctors in the United States later disputed Otto's condition upon his return. Some have stated that his teeth looked fine, that his arms and legs were okay, and not as his father had described. But others have vehemently disputed these counterclaims. Otto's own dentist in Ohio provided his dentistry file and x-rays, which evidenced that his teeth had been changed significantly from what they had historically been. His teeth, in fact, did not look the same. They appeared to have been rearranged. Otto was howling involuntarily. He was jerking violently, making inhuman sounds. The Warmbiers told the news media that it was clear that their son had been tortured by the North Koreans. Tortured to the point of complete physical and mental breakdown. He had a shaved head, a feeding tube coming out of his nose. He stared blankly into space, jerking violently, unable to see or hear anything. it appeared as though someone had taken a pair of pliers and rearranged his bottom teeth. The official medical explanation is that Otto had suffered some kind of cardio-neurological event that then led to severe neurological damage. According to Joseph Yoon, in a meeting on June 6, 2017, a week before Otto was released, his North Korean counterpart told him that Otto had contracted foodborne botulism not long after he began serving his sentence. The North Korean stated that he had then fallen into a coma after taking a sleeping tablet. Foodborne botulism is a very rare toxin, which is produced by the bacterium Clostridium botulinum. The toxins attack the central nervous system, the brain, and spinal cord, and can cause paralysis. The Clostridium botulinum bacteria is found in soil, dust, and river sediment, and thus foodborne botulism is caused when someone eats food containing the toxins, because it has not been properly canned, preserved, or cooked. It's highly toxic and dangerous. The sufferer can have serious breathing issues, nausea, vomiting, pains, and then finally paralysis. If left untreated, it will eventually be fatal. Although, even if you receive treatment and survive the disease, the damage can still be lifelong. Otto had allegedly eaten some food that had this bacteria within it, the North Korean authorities claimed. However, when the doctors in the United States began to examine Otto, they found no evidence of botulism occurring in Otto's internal system. Doctors ran tests to see if there was any evidence of active or chronic denervation, or any repetitive stimulation that would suggest active botulism. But there was none. Whatever happened, whatever Otto's captors had done to him, it wasn't botulism. Otto had substantial loss of brain tissue. Parts of his brain were missing, but nobody could say specifically what had happened to him. Was this some kind of severe head trauma? The medical team in Cincinnati speculated. Had Otto's captors beaten him or violently tortured him? But there was no evidence of any physical trauma, no evidence of healed injuries, no reformed fractures, nothing. Parts of his body were severely deformed, but part of that could be from him doing this to himself when he was in the hospital, or caused by different unsuccessful treatments. It was all extremely disturbing. Allegedly, he'd been like this since around a month after he was convicted. Otto never returned to consciousness, and on June 19th, 2017, when he was just 22 years old, and at the behest of his parents, Otto's feeding tube was removed, and he passed away in a Cincinnati hospital. The Warmbier family didn't want an autopsy completed, and because of this, it's difficult to know the exact cause of Otto's condition. The family did allow non-invasive scans to be performed, however, and those scans revealed that there were no signs of a head injury, although they just showed that Otto had a severe loss of brain mass. Had they tortured Otto and performed some kind of extreme and horrific lobotomy? We'll never know. Otto Warmbier passed away less than a week since North Korea released him from detainment. Pyongyang officials stated that the American student's death was just as much of a mystery to them as well. They denied accusations that Warmbier's brain injuries were from torture and beatings during captivity. It's unlikely that Otto was guilty of any crimes while he was in North Korea, and for all intents and purposes, it appears that whatever the regime plans were for Otto, these plans backfired when whatever they did to him went incredibly wrong. Otto Warmbier was a man barely out of his teens, and he was subjected to some of the most inhumane and horrific treatment for absolutely no gain or reason. Otto was an extremely smart person, tough, and second from the top of his graduating class. He knew where he was going in life. He had an extremely promising future ahead of him. He was a well-travelled person, and he knew not to mess around whilst in North Korea. The idea of him doing something so risky, well, the more you know about Otto, the more the situation just seems entirely unlikely. Why was there a delay between his arrest and when they actually showed him on state TV announcing his charges? Why was Otto's confession worded in a vernacular completely alien to how Otto spoke? Why did they wait until Otto was leaving the country before they arrested him, not in any of the two preceding days since the alleged crime took place. Why, if Otto was accused of stealing a propaganda poster, did the video show someone taking the poster off a wall, but just placing it on the floor and not actually taking it? Was the whole thing about leverage for North Korea? About international and diplomatic gains? In February 2019, President Donald Trump stated that he didn't blame North Korean leader Kim Jong-un for Warmbier's condition or death. Speaking in Hanoi, Trump added, quote,
"Have you in Singapore or here confronted Kim Jong-un about Otto Warmbier's death?
I have.
Asked him to take responsibility. Yeah. And what did he say to you? And why do you call him your friend?
I have talked about it. And I really don't think it was in his interest at all. I know the Warmbier family very well. I think they're an incredible family. What happened is horrible. I really believe something very bad happened to him. And I don't think that the top leadership knew about it. I got the prisoners back. I got the hostages back, and Otto was one of the hostages, but Otto came back in a shape that was not even to be talked about. I thought it was horrible. Now, the others came back extremely healthy, but Otto came back in a condition that was just terrible. Those prisons are rough. They're rough places, and bad things happened, but I really don't believe that he was... I don't believe he knew about it.
Did he tell you that he did not, did Kim Jong-un tell you?
He felt badly about it. I did speak to him. He felt very badly. But he knew the case very well, but he knew it later. And, you know, you got a lot of people, a big country, a lot of people. And in those prisons and those camps, you have a lot of people. And some really bad things happened to Otto. Some really, really bad things.
Why are you
But he tells me, that he didn't know about it. And I will take him at his word.
In 2019, 2 years after Otto's death, a Korean-American businessman came forward to say that he too had been held captive by the North Korean regime at the same time as Otto. He would state that at one time he had been in a hallway and he had seen a white guy, an American, who he believes was Otto Warmbier, being dragged through a hallway by prison guards. He saw this white guy completely covered in water, he said, head to toe, as if he had been waterboarded or undergone water torture of some kind. Otto was unconscious at the time. The Korean-American businessman also stated that they had done the same thing to him while he was incarcerated there. So water torture was definitely being used at that facility. A 2018 inquest resulted in the North Korean state being found liable for Otto's death in a federal court hearing. Whilst the North Koreans did not contest the allegations or ruling, the American court ruled that the family of Otto Warmbier are owed in excess of $500 million by the North Korean government. Understandably, this judgment isn't enforceable. However, in 2023, $2.2 million in North Korean funds was seized from a Russian bank account and awarded to the Warmbiers as part of payment of the $500 million judgment. In April 2019, the North Korean government sent a bill to the US State Department for $2 million, stating that was the bill for Otto Warmbier's stay in their prison camp and care in their hospital. The Warmbier family announced publicly that this was like receiving a ransom note. The United States government nor the Warmbiers have paid the bill to date. Good night, everyone.
Thank you for taking the time to listen to our show tonight. Be sure to leave us a 5-star review on your chosen podcast platform and subscribe to our show so that you never miss an episode. Our shows aren't sponsored by any company or corporation, so any support you can give us goes a long way in supporting the work that we do. From all of us here at Dead Souls, sleep tight.